Hello and welcome back to Kitchen Curiosity, the podcast that delves into the heart of food service equipment and the hospitality industry. I'm here in Sheffield today at Mary Chef's head office and factory as well, which is part of Wellbuilt, which is an Ali Group company. I've got two guests with me today, David McCown, MBE, who's the Director of University of Hospitality Seminars, and James Benger, who's Head of Culinary for Wellbuilt Group. We're going to be discussing the world of Mary Chef, Wellbuilt, education, and also getting new talents into the sector. So David, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Good to be here.
Thank you for joining us. Lovely to meet you. And it's fair to say, David, that you spent a lifetime championing hospitality and you know, innovation awards, that sort of thing. How did you first get into the industry? And can you give the listeners a bit of insight into, you know, your career, what you're doing now?
Yeah, absolutely. We'd have to go back to the 1980s as a starting point here.
Okay.
Left catering college, got a job as a chef with a contract catering company, thoroughly enjoyed that. And then in 1986, they sent me on the Hotel and Catering Training Board Trainer Skills 1 course, and I thoroughly benefited from it.
Right.
I thought it was amazing, and I set it as an objective to actually work for them. So 2 years later, I was no longer a chef. I was a training consultant for the HCITB, as people might remember them.
Wow, quite young, really.
Yeah, you don't know what year I was born, actually.
I'm just...
I was born in the 60s.
Right, okay.
So
really, it was quite young.
It was quite young. In fact, I was the youngest employee they'd ever had as a training consultant for the industry.
Right.
Now, a lot of listeners might not remember the Hotel and Catering Industry Training Board.
Mm.
It did become the Hotel and Catering Training Company. It was disbanded.
Right,
it was disbanded very politically by Margaret Thatcher.
Oh, wow.
But a decision was made that industry didn't need all these training boards.
Mm.
It was a bit of a stick on the industry to actually train their staff.
Right.
Because there was something called a levy, and industry had to pay a levy if your wage bill exceeded a certain amount. I can actually remember what the amount was.
For the business.
So let me give you an example.
Wow.
If you had a hotel with a workforce and your annual wage bill exceeded £75,000,
yeah,
which wasn't difficult. It wouldn't be difficult now, would it? But back in the 80s, it wasn't difficult. Mm. Well, actually, the training boards were in existence from the late 60s, but you would then have to pay a levy by law.
Right, okay.
Like a form of tax.
As a
percentage of your wage bill.
Wow.
Margaret believed that people didn't need this stick to train their staff because there was something called levy exemption.
Right.
As a company, you didn't have to pay this if you could demonstrate to the Hotel and Catering Training Board that you had great staff training.
Mm.
So you had in-depth induction training, you had training records for your team, you developed people, and you had your levy bill reduced to 0.03% rather than the actual amount it should have been. So a fraction of the cost.
So that was kind of where you started.
Yeah, that's where I started. Yeah. So that's just an interesting background. But then we, well, it's actually gone full circle in some ways, hasn't it? Because now we have the apprenticeship levy.
Yeah, exactly.
Industry have got to pay a levy as a percentage of the turnover.
Exactly.
And so the sticks come back in many ways because you can only get to your levy pot if you invest in your people.
Definitely.
So there we go. That's the background. But really, let's not worry about the politics. It was the thrill of standing there with a set of coloured pens and a flip chart, which attracted me the most to becoming a trainer rather than a chef.
Right. And so sort of moving forward to now current day in your current role,
yeah.
What's that look like? What are you doing? And yeah.
Well, I'm now sort of doing my own thing, really, after over 30 years.
Of training?
Yeah. I'm reflecting on my career and doing things which I really enjoy doing.
Okay.
So after over 30 years of being the head of training at the University of Sheffield,
yeah,
I've decided to just focus on my own projects. So I'm taking it easy, you might say, at the moment.
Okay.
But I'm still working on some exciting projects.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm up to at the moment.
Okay. And you awarded the MBE.
Yep.
Which is obviously fantastic achievement.
Yeah, thank you.
What does that mean for you? And I wonder who gave you the MBE. Like, did you get it from the Queen, or who did you meet to do that?
It was Charles.
Oh, was it?
It was Charles.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you have to go?
I had to go to the palace and had to stand in line. And
wow.
And the orchestra plays a few songs, and you walk up and you have a little chat, and he pins the medal on you.
Yeah.
And he was very passionate about hospitality, and mm-hmm. And explained his passion for Derbyshire lamb, which is not too far away from here, really.
Right. Yeah.
And his own training centre up in Scotland, which develops chefs.
Mm-hmm.
He's very passionate about our industry. So, an honour for me, but great for the family who've put up with me going missing on work trips and things like that, for
yeah,
them
yeah.
to have that special moment as well.
What year was that when you received the
It MBA? Was 2019.
Oh, really? Really recent, to be
relatively
honest.
Relatively recent, yeah. Yeah, relatively recent.
How did you find out? Did you know it was coming, or was it a surprise, or how happened?
It is a surprise, yeah.
Right, okay.
Total surprise, yeah.
Okay.
Letter pops through the door.
Seriously?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
You open the envelope and read
yeah,
it
yeah,
and
yeah.
just double, well,
a
double
a massive,
check. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Massive accolade, really.
Thank you.
What's the biggest change that you've seen in the way that we train and develop people in hospitality over the years?
Well, the biggest change is going to be information technology, IT. I feel a lot of people developing their skills through video, mm-hmm. Through computer-based training. It does have its place. I mean, I thought it was great. I was signed in here at Well Built today on that computer to get our badge. And we went through all the induction very quickly on the computer screen. And
yeah.
and that, you know, I can see that it has its place for certain things.
Mm.
But that's going to be the fundamental change. So I mentioned earlier about the thrill of standing up there with a flip chart and a set of coloured pens and delivering a training session. A lot of that is being taken over now by computer-based training,
yeah.
where you're not actually interacting with a human being. And, you know, we can see artificial intelligence coming into play here as
online
well.
Online or?
Online, even some of the live training now is in a virtual classroom as opposed to being in the real classroom.
Yeah.
I mean, we're in a great facility today here at Well Built. You know, I can see that they can run some great conferences here. And it wouldn't surprise me if people pop up on that screen up there from America or Canada or, mm-hmm. or you know, anywhere yeah, yeah. in the world. So it does have its place, doesn't it?
Mm.
But that's going to be the biggest change.
Okay. I mean, we've seen as well now, like, the first complete virtual or hybrid kind of school in London where children need to go to school one day a week. Do you see that happening, like, with hospitality colleges that, you know, they maybe only it's online and it's on or just online?
I think this is another significant change, isn't it? When I went to catering college, I went 4.5 days a week and we had over 30 hours of contact time with our chef lecturers.
Yeah.
I've been told that sometimes students on full-time courses are having just 12 hours of contact time with the chef lecturer.
That's it.
Yeah. They are supplementing it with other work.
And, in the trade, maybe. Or.
Yeah, or the workplace.
Yeah.
But that's down to the student themselves. Some colleges are brilliant getting placements for their students, but you could still get through your course if you wished. By, you know, without the same sort of contact time.
It's harder, isn't it, I guess, because it is a practical.
Yeah, well, I believe so. I believe
training industry, so.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
And commodities and food and equipment, you know, it's all changing. So colleges have got to keep up to date with what's happening in the world of food service equipment and keep up to date with food trends. And it is an expensive program to run.
Yeah.
You know.
Of course.
Whereas, you know, other courses don't have those costs. They just need a classroom with computers in it.
Yeah, that's a good, yeah, that's a good point, actually.
Yeah, I think that's a challenge for a lot of catering, training centres, colleges, universities who want to deliver those practical skills, you know.
Mm. Are you seeing the numbers changing that are coming through? Are they dropping off? Because obviously everyone's talking about skill shortages and things in our sector.
We're hearing positive things.
Okay. Oh,
we're hearing
good.
Positive things. I do think that, love or hate these TV shows which promote foods and promote careers in the industry, numbers at some colleges are very healthy in terms of recruits. It's about the industry then keeping hold of them once they're ready for employment, and that they are able to progress at that point in time.
Mm.
So, yeah, I don't think we need to be too down about that.
Mm.
Yes, there are skills shortages. I often say that's just staff shortages, really, because the industry themselves can help to develop skills.
True.
That's why we're starting to see a lot of progressive companies and organisations creating their own training academies.
Yeah.
Like Exclusive Hotels have their own chef academy, their own food and beverage academy. These are employers.
Mm.
Simon Rogan, he's got an academy, and others.
Yeah, yeah. Well, even on this show, we've had manufacturers have got academies, and we've had the Rue brothers, and they've got their scholarship.
Yeah.
And The Alchemist actually did a culinary competition. I guess this is all about trying to retain the staff.
Yes.
I guess add value, I suppose.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. I think the industry is, you know, becoming more and more attractive. You know, once we get the right messages out there, a lot of restaurants close 3 days a week now, which gives the team, you know, more downtime to do more social activities as well.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it's becoming more attractive, cleaner environments.
Yeah.
You know, induction equipment again, and things like that, keeping the environments cooler.
Better working.
Yeah.
So just a slight change of tack, really. University Hospitality Seminars Limited.
That's right. That's what I do now.
Did that come around, and what are you doing? And
that's a long story. But a University Hospitality Seminars has actually been going since the 1970s.
Oh, okay, right.
So
long time.
Yeah. I've been involved for the last 12 years.
Right.
It was actually administrated out of Oxford University.
Okay.
And I was approached about the opportunity to lead on this here in Sheffield.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that would be great. Fundamentally, what we do is we organise conferences and training days for those people who work within the university hospitality sector.
Mm-hmm.
So they are educational establishments, but it's the commercial catering operation within those establishments. So, for example, at the University of Sheffield, we'd have over 16 cafes and they've all got a Murray chef in them.
Right, okay.
So we actually have got footfall coming through, whether they be visitors, academics, or students who want to have a lunch, a breakfast, an evening meal. And then you've got all the other conference activity on that. I mean, most universities have got fabulous conference centres. Several have got hotels, beautiful dining rooms, which look a bit like Harry Potter's Hall, where you can do a great, you know, wedding even in those environments. So it's probably part of the hospitality industry that everyone doesn't think of at first.
Yeah, yeah,
but
of
course. It does employ a lot of chefs and food and beverage professionals.
And I guess the universities are doing that to utilise those spaces and sometimes they're empty.
Well, that's right, especially over the summer months.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got that sweet spot from sort of June to September where, you know, conference business, you know,
weddings and
conferences and things like that can take place. But you've got a lot of students as well who are sort of coming to terms with living on their own and cooking. And if we can help them with that and give them the opportunity to buy food as well, it makes their university experience
a bit better.
A bit better, yeah.
So a couple of light-hearted questions for you, if that's okay. You're hosting a dinner party for five hospitality legends. I know this could be difficult or possibly political. They could be past or present. Doesn't really matter. Who might you invite?
Yeah. Okay. Five. Right. Where shall I start? I tell you one. I definitely have, and that'd be Paul Bocuse.
Okay.
Who's got an amazing restaurant in Lyon.
Right.
And it's where the Bocuse competition takes place every year.
Right.
In fact, Conva-Firm are the main oven sponsor of the Bocuse d'Or competition. Right. I had the privilege of going to that restaurant. Complete legend.
Right.
You know, the godfather of cooking. So
wow, okay.
Paul Bocuse would definitely be there. Number two, I'm going to say Marco Pierre-White.
Nice. Okay.
There is a reason why Marco, and I have been giving this some thought. You did give me the heads up on this. Not all the questions, but you give me the heads up on this one. So, Marco Pierre-White, because number three would be Gordon Ramsay.
Oh my word!
I think there could be some.
That would be an interesting.
I think there could be a bit of interesting discussion around the dinner table.
They could be sat next to each other.
Oh, they're probably sat next to each other. Yeah, sharing a bottle of wine. Paul Bocuse.
I'm sure Gordon will love that.
Oh, Marco. and Gordon Ramsay.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to say Claire Smythe, three Michelin star chef, worked for Gordon.
Yes.
An amazing restaurant in London called
Notting
Core.
Hill, I think.
Yeah, it's called Core. Wow. Yeah. Get there if you can. She's got a place in Australia as well. Mm. I thought that would be
really good choice. Yeah.
Yeah. Had a different dynamic to this.
Probably calm Gordon down a bit.
Well,
Marco.
That'd be interesting. And then number five, I'm going to go with an old friend of mine who's passed away, who'd love this, I'm sure, love this opportunity. And that'd be Andrew Bennett. Mm. He was the chair of the Craft Guild of Chefs. He was the executive chef of the Sheraton Park Lane Hotel.
Okay.
And he was the chair of judges for UK Young Restaurant Team of the Year, which is a competition which I administrate. I think he'd just love the opportunity and he would definitely be the calming influence on them. and also, interestingly, Gordon Ramsay was a commis chef for Andrew.
Seriously?
Yeah. Wow. I know that Andrew would like to remind Gordon that he was a commis chef for him.
Many years ago. That's a good strong lineup.
It's a bit of a foodie lineup, isn't it?
It is, especially if you're cooking. It's going to be quite stressful.
I think they'd all just want to talk to Paul Bocuse. Really, I think they'd all just sort of just. I probably wouldn't be any fireworks. It'd just be everyone, I think, would just be in awe of Paul Bocuse, I think.
So if you think of like one dish that just takes you back to your childhood, what would it be?
When I go back to my childhood and food, I just think of food that I did very disliked.
Oh, seriously.
That brings back memories. So
some people
go, apple pie, my grandma made, or bread and butter pudding. Mm-hmm. And, I love those dishes, by the way. I love apple pie. I love bread and butter pudding. But when people say a dish from your childhood, I go, liver and onions.
Oh, God.
I used to hate liver.
Yeah.
Liver and onions.
Corned beef hash would be mine I didn't like.
Now, I don't mind corned beef hash.
Okay.
I don't mind that, but liver and onions, especially if it was pig's liver. Lamb's liver, I could handle lamb's liver. It actually had a bit of a resurgence, lamb's liver, didn't it? And mashed potatoes in gastro pubs, but no, liver and onions. It's got to be... Oh, no. Can I just say another one?
Yeah.
My father used to tell me how good food was back in the old days, when I wanted to be a chef. And he said, one of my favourite dishes is tripe.
Oh, my word.
So he says, the best tripe you can get is honeycomb tripe. You fill all the holes with vinegar. And it's absolutely amazing.
And it stinks when you cook it.
Yeah. Oh. So he had a go at making the tripe and onions. It was disgusting.
Yeah.
It was disgusting. In fact, Marco Pierre White got people to eat tripe, you know.
Really?
He did a show, I'm going back a few years now, where he'd have a catering van. Mm-hmm. And his catering van just pulled up in Leeds. And he would do the cooking and people would queue up.
Yeah, yeah.
And he got them to eat tripe. He gave it a different name. And
he dressed it up probably really nicely.
Well, he panade'd it.
Right.
So it was coated in the breadcrumbs with a seasoning and deep fried it, like in small strips of tripe. And people lapped it up.
Wow.
But I think they were enjoying the savoury breadcrumb coating probably more than
it's not my cup of tea
more than the actual product.
Wow.
But yeah, my mum could make a good trifle though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll go with trifle for that answer. So no, I'm joking. So final question for you, David, for this part of the podcast.
Yeah.
What advice could you give to someone coming into the industry, starting out their career, you know, around training or education
We need more people to want to think about getting involved in training and education as a career. We need more chefs to think, you know what, could I help my local college? Mm-hmm. Could I become a chef trainer myself? You know, I would encourage them to do that. We need more people from industry thinking about a career change to help that next generation. I would encourage them to look into offering their time, their support. But what helped me, I mentioned that Hotel and Catering Training Board course earlier, but I did a further in adult education teacher certificate. I believe it can still be done part-time. They might have changed the name of the course now, But that gives you the fundamentals, and it is all really about planning and preparing and developing your lesson plans before you go in and actually deliver it.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that very, very useful. And then on the back end of that, you get some teaching practice opportunities. So I would suggest that as a route. I actually think that catering colleges would be delighted to have that opportunity to help people who want to get involved in education and training, or even drop me a line.
Perfect. Okay.
Information at universityhospitality.co.uk.
Fantastic. Well, David, thank you for all your insight. It's great stories as well.
Yeah.
We're going to take a short break.
Okay.
And then I'm going to be joined by the head of the culinary team for Well Built UK, and then you're going to rejoin us for the second part. So thank you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Welcome to the world of Ali, the largest and most diverse food service equipment company on the planet. With over 110 brands under the Ali Group umbrella, we serve more than 150 countries worldwide. Our brands are at the forefront of innovation, offering cutting-edge technology and ergonomic designs that keep pace with the ever-evolving market. But we're not just a global leader, we're a network of local companies working together to deliver excellence. Ali Group's unmatched expertise in food service makes us the proud exclusive sponsor of Kitchen Curiosity. To learn more, visit aligroup.com.
Next up, I'm joined by a chef whose career has evolved from the past to production lab. Jane Benjie is the head of culinary at Well Built UK and is a creative force behind the equipment of Merry Chef and other brands. James, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for inviting us here to your head or factory in Sheffield, yeah, the Merrychef.
Yeah, it's Merrychef factory. So we have plenty of space for the equipment to be showcased to our customers. And it's a working factory, so people can come and have a look around of the factory and see how the Merrychefs are actually built.
Is everything here built for the world? Mainly, or you have some other
subsidiaries? We have some other locations around the world. So we have a factory in China,
okay,
that creates Merrychef and
for the Far East,
and also the Confitherm Max is also built,
okay,
over in China as well.
But the rest of it's coming out.
All the rest of it is coming out, and then we ship it out worldwide. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll take a step back. Tell us about your journey into sort of chefing a bit and then into food service equipment, and then your role here as well.
Yeah. So I sort of really got the bug, if you like, around cooking when I used to sort of help my mum on the Sunday,
right,
on the Sunday roast. You know, it's a blank canvas that she was taking raw ingredients and then turning it into a feast on a Sunday. Plus she had her chores to do. Plus she would go out and see her mother, my grandmother, to make sure that she was okay. And then it just inspired me when you can take three simple ingredients and turn it into an apple pie, for example. You got your sugar, you got your butter, you got your flour and your eggs, and then you turn it into something creative. It's a little bit different nowadays where time is a bit more precious, so we have more convenience foods, but you still need to learn those basics to get to where you are, to become a chef.
Of course.
So once I finished my school, I then went on to Solihull College.
Okay.
And I did 2 years there, City and Guilds, 706 1 and 2, and also my 707 and a Food Hygiene Award as well.
Yeah.
So I left there with all my grades after 2 years, and then ended up getting my first job at the Manor Hotel in Meriden.
Right.
In roughly about 1987, I think it was.
Okay.
1987, 88, where I learnt my trade. And my first head chef, Peter Griffiths, was my mentor to get me through those first steps of the industry, of the catering industry. Yeah, so it's a big step from going from a college to into the big wide world of catering, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. And then sort of moving forward, what got you into sort of from a kitchen into food service equipment and ultimately well built?
So I sort of did become a little bit disillusioned as how the industry was going. It was getting harder. You weren't getting the same sort of amount of people come through the doors of the same quality. So it was getting harder to maintain those standards. I was currently head chef at the Alston Manor, Stratford-upon-Avon.
Okay.
And then I got a phone call from my mentor, Peter Griffiths, again. He was telling me about this job that a company called Enodis were looking for a chef to sell microwaves.
Right.
I said, all due respect, chef, I'm not a microwave salesman, I'm a chef. But then when we started talking a bit more about it, I looked into it a bit more. Mm. It's not just microwaves, it's high-speed cooking, and that really interested me.
Yeah.
To how this actual piece of equipment worked. So then I was taken on by Enodis way back in 2008.
Right.
Promoting or showcasing and training people on how to use the Merrychef ovens.
Okay.
That's where it all started, yeah.
Wow, okay. So quite a long time. When did the company change names to Well Built?
So we've changed names quite a few times along the way. Yeah. So we've gone from Enodis to Manitowoc, to Manitowoc Food Service, and then we ended up with Well Built, and then we had a takeover by Ali Group about two and a half, three years ago.
Yes.
So probably in the last 5-6 years, it's been Well Built.
Yeah.
And I'll speak to my customers and I'll say, "Hi, yeah, it's James here from Well Built," and they say, "Who?" I said, "The Merrychef man." "Oh, yeah. So Merrychef is really our forefront of what we do with our customers, although we have other pieces of equipment which are just as good to showcase within the Well Built portfolio.
Although Well Built's a very strong respected name as well,
isn't it? It hasn't lost its branding. It hasn't lost its strength. Even though we've changed the names, people still know who we are and what we are and what we can do for them, most definitely, yeah.
Yeah. So what excites you most about the innovation that's happening within Wellbuilt as a group, if you like?
So, yeah, the prospect of making an operator's job a little bit easier. I mean, David touched on, you know, a little bit earlier about the quality of people coming through from in the catering trade. So if we can make their job a little bit easier by using different technologies, making food cook a little bit quicker. We've just launched, or Confirm just launched, the latest Mini Max Pro.
Okay.
And it's the smallest one in the world. But it gives you so much flexibility in the oven, where you can steam, you can combi cook, you can convec cook.
Okay.
Yeah, it gives you good flexibility. So the innovation is always moving forward. So when I first started with Merry Chef brand, it was rotary dial.
Right.
Now, like most modern day things, it's all touch screens.
Yes.
It's easy to use, it's easy to follow, it's easy to train somebody how to use that piece of equipment. And the continuity, and all our equipment has that same sort of background. So if you can operate a Convotherm, you should be able to operate a Merry Chef as well.
Okay, similar sort of platforms.
Platform was the word I was looking for, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we're here at the Merry Chef factory.
Yeah.
Can you talk about the innovation within this organisation?
So they do have their own Merry Chef team, and there's a product manager, there's a product director who look at the MPI, or work closely with the MPI team, who work closely with the culinary team, who then we work closely with our customers. So we have like a voice of the customer.
Yeah.
What would they like to find out more about the oven? What could we do to improve the oven? So they're always looking at different ways.
Okay.
So we were the first manufacturer, or Merry Chef were the first manufacturer to produce a touchscreen, simple use, you know, and now we're using a high definition screen. So we've gone from like a normal analog system to a high definition system, which makes it easy for my job as well as for the customer.
Yeah.
So that new technology always comes out, so that they'll take that new technology and see if we can utilise it into the ovens or into some kind of manufacturer that we have in our portfolio. Yeah.
I saw downstairs as I came in, you got the nice coloured.
Yeah.
Is it different colours and ranges?
You can, you can do. So here at the factory now, they've not only got robots that can do the part of the welding, so all the ovens are handmade here.
Oh, wow.
So it's not a factory process or robotic process. We have two robots doing a lot of the welding. The metal comes in sheets, and then we cut that metal down into the components that we need for the ovens.
Wow.
And at the far end of the factory, we've got our own painting spraying booth.
Okay.
So you can have any colour you like, obviously, depending on the size of the order.
Yes, of course.
It has to be a good order for us to go down that line. But
of course. And is people wanting it? Is it popular?
A lot of the chain accounts do like it.
Yeah.
Because it's then coordinating with their brands. So if you've got red for Costa Coffee, then they can match up with their surroundings within their environment. Most people tend to go for a matte black, because then obviously the fingerprints don't show up.
Yeah.
Or the stainless steel, depending on if it's the front house or the back of house.
So, I mean, for food service operators that might not be familiar with the Merry Chef range, can you describe about it? What stands out? What's the difference?
So on the Merry Chef, it's an excellent piece of equipment where you can use it or place it at the front of the business or the back of the business, depending on where you want to be cooking.
Okay.
Because you don't need any extraction system with them. They're easy to use, and you get full consistency from the oven. So you put the same product in, you'll get a very good, consistent result every single time.
Whoever's using it.
It's easy to follow, easy to train.
Yeah.
And there's step-by-step instructions as well on the screen on how to clean the oven at the end of the day as well. So it's all very intuitive and very informative for the end user. So, yeah, it's easy to use. It cooks very quickly without compromising the quality of the product.
Yeah. Okay. So a bit more of a sort of personal question. Is there a memorable dish that you've ever cooked that stands out in your memory?
Yes, like, most definitely.
For better or worse? Or give me both if you want.
I can give you two, yeah. I'll go for the worst one, get the worst one out of the way. So I was in South Africa working with one of our dealers in South Africa called Foodserve. So I was a bit unaware of the surroundings that I was working in the kitchen. And they had a sugar shaker and a salt shaker identical. So you can see where I'm going with this. I was making up a dessert as part of my demonstration. And it was a pancake with a cheesecake filling with fresh fruit rolled up and then plenty of sugar in it. And then put it through the Merry Chef, 40 seconds, for example, and then serve it to the customer. And I was thinking, oh, that looks really pretty. Some fresh fruit on top, some nice coulis. And then he tucked into it and he goes and he spat it out. I said, it can't be that bad. And he said, it's really salty.
Oh,
and that's where I picked up.
You cover it.
Yeah, that's where I picked up the salt instead of the sugar.
Oh, no.
But we laughed. We laughed and joked about it. And he said, very good demonstration. I won't forget about it for the obvious reasons. So sometimes things can work out better for you if you make a mistake. It sort of stays in their heads. But it was purely accidental.
I mean, if you could only have one piece of equipment for the rest of your life, what would it be? I mean, that's a big question, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Obviously, a kitchen is quite big. You do need multiple pieces of equipment to get your menu out. I'd probably stick with a combination oven, like a Convotherm.
Yeah, good answer.
Because we do various sizes for a start off. We go from a mini range up to a big 2020, but it gives you full flexibility. Mm. You can steam, you can do combi cooking in there, you can do roasting and baking, and you can do smoking in there as well. So it gives you good flexibility of your cooking platform, most definitely.
So just to wrap up this part of the podcast, you're still pretty close to the chef community, I understand. How important is that?
I think
in your role.
Yeah, it's very important. You know, you still want to keep in touch with what's going on out there, food trends, new pieces of equipment that comes out. But you can take somebody's idea off the menu and cook it through using a Merry Chef or a Convotherm or induction or a Frymaster or a Garland. And then it sort of gives you confidence or the customer confidence in that you're cooking my dish on your equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps we should talk a little bit more to see what Wellbuilt can do for us. You know, it's not just about the equipment, it's about the energy saving, the ease of use. It all comes as one complete package.
Okay. Well, thank you for that.
A pleasure.
Good to hear, you know, your career and obviously a bit more depth into Merry Chef. So just going to take a very short break and then David's going to rejoin us.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
So to wrap things up for the final part of the podcast, David, welcome back. And James is staying on, joining us as well. And we're going to be talking about a subject that's obviously close to both of your hearts. I know about bringing sort of new young talent into the hospitality sector.
Yeah.
And programs like Skills for Chef and the UK Young Restaurant Team of the Year, etc. Yeah. So you've both been judging, I understand, the UK Young Restaurant of the Year.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
Well, I've not been judging. I've been sort of organising.
Organising, okay.
James is one of our judges.
Okay, yes. So you're both part of it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, David, maybe you want to just tell us, what is that and give us some context and background to it?
So let's start off with the Skills for Chefs conference. It's a conference which was created for the very first time in 1998.
Okay.
It's run every year since. We missed 2 years because of something which happened, which affected everyone in this country. So this year it's our 26th annual conference.
Okay.
In fact, an organisation called Viscount Catering were involved in the very first ever Skills for Chefs conference in 1998. Viscount Catering was here where we are now today.
Oh, well,
that was the original name of the business, which was then bought by Nordis.
That's right.
I remember. Oh, wow. I remember the. I'll call him the chief exec. I can't remember his what his job title was, but he was the man in charge. Gordon Shepherd was his name.
Yeah, right, okay.
And he supported the very first conference, and we had this Viscount Catering kitchen built just for the conference. So there we go. Now, 12 years ago, every year I would get phone calls from colleges of further education. Can we bring some students to the Skills for Chefs conference? Now, the Skills for Chefs conference was created for industry chefs.
Right.
A business networking, high-profile chefs, some social events as well. You know, and we aim to attract, you know, some senior chefs as delegates, people who can procure kitchen equipment to help out the sponsors who we've got on board. But then at the same time, I thought, I don't like saying no. And then I thought, wait a minute, wouldn't it be great if we did have a small number of high-performing students at the conference as our guests?
Yeah.
How could I make that happen? I tell you what, we'll have a competition. And the finalists of this competition can come to the conference. So every year, out of 250 delegates, we have 15 students as our, I call them VIP guests.
Right, okay.
They're allowed to come and join in with the conference, but they've earned their ticket. Through the competition.
Right.
And this competition also gives them a culinary trip. So the winners this year are going to San Sebastian for 4 nights.
Wow, okay.
So as well as coming to the Skills for Chefs conference in Sheffield, the winners will go on this amazing culinary study trip. We've been to previous cities like Lisbon, Paris, Italy. Mm-hmm. And 1 year we took them to Colombia.
Wow.
So it's a competition. The competition is for two chefs, one front of house. And what is unique about this competition is that they run a real restaurant service. So we have, at the final, there'll be 5 teams,
mm-hmm.
and there'll be 20 restaurant guests. Each team has got to cook and serve their meals to the 4 restaurant guests and also cook their meals for the judges, of which James is one of them.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
And James, you were, what was it like judging then?
It's very good. It's really interesting to see the students come through.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they do look petrified when they first start, but once they get into their routine, it's pleasing to see, because we've all been there.
Yeah.
Starting as a student for a lot of catering students. I've done competition work in the past, so I know it can be nerve-wracking.
How many's in the team?
Two chefs.
One front of house. Yeah,
three.
So there's three of the team.
Okay, wow. So there's a waiter.
Yeah, they can have a mentor, but the mentor on the day can't help.
Right.
So the mentor doesn't even watch. Yeah. The mentor does all the training with them before the semi-final. It's the semi-finals, which we've just done. We had 8 teams at the semis. And James and the judges have now picked 5 teams to come through to the final. So unfortunately, 3 teams got eliminated last month at the semi-finals.
Wow. Okay.
So we do all judge it. So there's Vicky Rupert from MSK and myself and Lee from Wellux as well. So there's probably 4 main judges. Then David will then invite guest judges along the way. So this year we had Tom Hamlet.
And the diners, they have an input or what? Not really?
Not really.
They're just enjoying the experience,
don't they? But they
yeah.
You could ask them if you wanted to.
We do ask them. Food service front of house, you know, do talk to the guests. The guests are there and they're supporting the industry as well by giving up their time to comfort for a meal, a free course meal with wines, with juices, and we don't charge them.
Oh, that's a hard gig, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I guess by kind of keeping it to the judges,
yes,
you keep it really about that sort of technical skill, creativity. You're really keeping quite objective and clear.
It's not just about the technical, it's about the front of house, how they will react and work with the two chefs back of house.
Okay.
So it's all about the teamwork as well.
So timing is quite crucial.
Between the
front house and back
house.
So what
are you looking for in the winners?
Mm. A bit of everything, really, aren't we? We're looking, 'cause there's also a separate judge at the front of the house who'll monitor how the front house waiters are working.
Yeah.
But they can't see everything that happens at the back of the house in the kitchens. So then we link together and there's a few debates that could go on for a long time, who should go through, who shouldn't go through. But ultimately, at the end of the day, yeah, it can do, yeah. We have a good debate because there's always something that might take a turn to that team or to that team because of this happening or that happening.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's ultimately that if something does go wrong, the judges will step in and help.
Of course.
Not put them under pressure, not make them look silly, but will help to make sure the food still gets out to the customer.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of things which are scored, and we also have a sustainability award as well.
Right.
So we're looking at teams in the wastage, how they use
how
the
they
equipment.
Work as well, most definitely.
How the semi-final was all done on induction, wasn't it? So at least when the pan's not on the stove, we're not wasting energy.
Yeah.
But it's sustainable in terms of what do they do with the food waste, or is there such a thing as food waste? I was reading about a project just yesterday about root to tip. Every part of the vegetable can be used.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm. So, yeah, we're looking at things like that, of course, hygiene, food safety, personal hygiene as well. But I know the judges are very keen on flavour.
Yes.
Texture. And
presentation
and I do like it when they use terms like great cooking, great cooking, not overcomplicated, great cooking. Timing's so important.
I mean fantastic initiative, and that's probably a silly question, but why is it important for our sector to have these sort of initiatives,
these competitions? One, I think I've got lots of reasons why I think it's important. Well, I think it creates a memory for the students and the lecturers. I've followed the alumni over the last 12 years of this competition, and I know now that some students are working at the Goring Hotel in London, who've gone through the competition, working for Sat Bains, two Michelin star restaurant.
So a good pedigree there.
I could go. I know one of the competitors working at the Savoy. I could go on and on and on about where they are. But I also think it really develops skills through repetition. I don't want to be critical of catering colleges because we had the same problems back in the 1980s. I was given the best end of lamb. I did it once under close supervision. I never saw a best end of lamb again for 2 years. Never saw it again. Then I went into industry. Oh, you'll have done rack of lamb, won't you, David, at college? Yes. And I made a right mess of it. I know through this competition, we had filleting of lemon soles on today.
And they all did really, really well.
Tells me is that they've been repetition. They've been doing filleting of lemon soles many times before they got through to the semi-final.
To get it right.
Yeah. So I do think the competition also encourages the colleges to ensure repetition takes place, because then they've got a skill then which won't lose, that won't leave them. And if they went into industry now and someone said, there's a lemon sole, can you take the four fillets off? Bang, they'll be able to do it.
Yeah.
So I think the competition also helps that. And of course, it creates experiences, the experience that students will have this year when they come to the Skills for Chefs conference. We've got a stellar lineup of chefs presenting. Akhtar Islam from Hafim in Birmingham, Gareth Ward from Yinchio Restaurant in Wales, two Michelin stars, Adam Smith from Cowarth Park, one Michelin star, Michael Wignall, one Michelin star from Yorkshire.
Lewis Wilson,
the pastry chef from the Ritz is coming. So they'll get to network with these people as well. So we're creating experiences as well for them.
Opportunities.
And opportunities.
Yeah.
And many of the students go away from the conference with several job opportunities.
I imagine they do.
Yeah.
I think it also gives them confidence as well.
Confidence
and the skill factor.
Mm.
Once you do a competition once and you win something, it just gives you a good, like, look at me, look what I've done, look what I've achieved.
Yeah, definitely.
It does give you a bit more of a confidence.
Make you feel good about yourself. And
It does. And they should be proud of what they've achieved.
Absolutely.
To date, you know. Getting through to the semi-final was hard enough, but getting through to the final is a great achievement.
Yeah.
So the competition is done and finished, and Skills for Chef is
National final is at the Skills for Chef competition.
So all we've done so far
this year is the semis.
Just the semis, okay, right,
and then
sorry.
June the 25th.
That's going to be the conference.
June the 25th and 26th is the Skills for Chefs conference.
Okay.
We actually run the national final of UK Young Restaurant Team of the Year on the 25th of June, the first day of the conference setup, mm-hmm. so to speak. And then on the 26th of June, we have a gala dinner where everyone gets dressed up and looks very smart. And there'll be 200 at this gala dinner at Firth Hall at the University of Sheffield. On that night, we'll hand out all the trophies.
Yeah.
Well Built have got a trophy to present as well to one of the teams.
Okay.
For Best Kitchen.
So for people to attend Skills for Chef, they have to apply
go to our website, www.skillsforchefs.org.uk is our website where you'll see all the conference programme.
They can come to conference.
And they can buy a place and come
fantastic.
To conference, yeah.
Well, then
it is a very good conference to come, David, just get some wonderful guests.
It sounds good. I mean, I'm actually just myself, so
yeah.
It sounds really good.
Well, 26 years of doing this now, so it's we'll always change things. I think you've got to keep changing things a little bit. So really now it's really a one day conference, but two nights. So everyone travels on the Wednesday, the 25th. And then Wednesday night, we have a welcome dinner.
Yeah.
And Akhtar Islam is going to be at our welcome dinner.
Oh, is he?
And then on the following day, we run the conference all day, the gala dinner, and then people go home again the following day. People can just come for one day if they wish, but the majority come for the whole event.
Yeah. So it's learning, it's networking.
Yes. Learning, networking. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm on the website.
No,
I'm interested, so that's good.
James,
what can manufacturers, educators and consultants do to support young people with these kind of initiatives more, do you think?
So part of the conference, we get to showcase our equipment. As we touched on it earlier, traditional cooking, you don't have induction all those years ago, now we do. So then we can hold seminars if they're interested in coming to say a Merry Chef factory here or down to Welbit office in Guildford, where we can have a one-to-one session with our equipment. It is modernising the way we are going. We need to find solutions where we're not so solely charged on having people in the kitchen. It's about getting the right trained people in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
But with the right equipment, which can help and enhance their processes in the kitchen. We touched on induction, making it a cleaner environment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Merry Chef can cook a lot quicker, so you're getting that footfall or getting down the queues. And the Conferm, you can multi-bake or multi-cook different trays of food at any one time. So it's all about using... I mean, we're always open to have people here. We love to have people at our offices showing and cooking food for them and stuff like that, especially here at Merry Chef, where we can show them around the factory. It's a great place to come and have a look. If they're interested in doing that, we can set that up, no problem at all.
Yeah. Okay. And David, I mean, I know we touched on it in the first part of the podcast, really, but how optimistic are you about the next generation coming into food service and hospitality?
I think we're going to be very optimistic about the future. And I think that's the only way to be very positive about it. A lot of pressure on the industry at the moment, a lot of financial challenges for them. I think luxury is here to stay, though. I think the top end will always be the top end. The pub style food is getting better and better, I believe, in this country. Mm-hmm. There's some real talent coming out of colleges. There's some talent coming out of apprenticeship schemes. We shouldn't forget those. But it's really important is that we nurture that talent once we get it, and we look after that talent. Mm. I do think that's getting better and better, and I do think the workplace is getting better,
right,
and very professional in many cases. So I think we've got to be optimistic. I think, I really do. And the great thing about hospitality is that you can travel the world with it, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, never be unemployed.
You won't be unemployed, but we want people to feel that they're having a very worthwhile career.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had an interesting conversation with a headmistress recently who suggested that hospitality might not be for her pupils.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, and I said, wow,
that's bold.
I said, wow, that's amazing. You know, think that. And she was unaware of the sort of career that I'd had in hospitality. And I feel very grateful for the career that hospitality has given me. And I'm sure there's a lot of other people who can say the same about their career in hospitality. So I still think there's a lot of work to be done, but mainly with schools. Mm. And, you know, how fantastic it was. I don't know if you follow Great British Menu, but Amber Francis was the champion, the champion of GB Menu. And she works in a school as a school chef. And I like the way they brand that. Yeah. She is the school chef. She's part of the school management team.
Right.
You know, whereas people would often say the school cook or the
That's impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was absolutely made up with that achievement. But if we can get the food right in schools, I think that's also fundamentally very, very important. Mm. So I would encourage equipment manufacturers, food service consultants to support school food as well. And think about, you know, what equipment they've got which might help schools deliver better food for their students. Because I think that in turn will then make more school leavers think of hospitality and or catering. I know a lot of people don't like the word catering, but food service as a profession. If the lunches they're having at lunchtime are also served in a very professional way. You know, we do know.
It gives a better perception.
It gives the whole industry a better perception. I have watched some amazing documentaries on TV, which you find on Netflix, where in some schools in France, they're having the most amazing lunches.
Mm.
Unfortunately, for whatever reason, this country's never really prioritised the school lunch. And I'd love them to prioritise the school lunch, you know.
Yeah. I totally agree with you.
And I think equipment might help on that.
Yeah. You know? And I mean, even if we look at Scandinavia, that they've shown there that the attainment levels are actually better when they have a good lunch and they eat properly.
Yes.
They don't learn as well if they don't have a good meal. And that's been proved all across Scandinavia.
Yeah. I mean, so, this whole discussion could continue, couldn't it?
We could do a whole new podcast on that with
hospital food as well.
So just to get back to to wrap us up about skills for chefs and the competition, but no, honestly, David, it's fantastic. It's a great point as well. James, what do you hope the finalists, whether they win or they don't win, get out of the competition?
I think David touched on it earlier, memory of what they've done, what they've achieved, but also the confidence as well to carry on doing what they're doing so well. Sometimes people do something and then they get disheartened that they didn't win or they didn't achieve something, and they might go and look for something else. But it's a tough trade to be in.
Mm.
It really is, but there's a lot of rewards along the way
to get where we want to be. You look at the likes of Marco Pierre White, the Ramses, you know, the Gary Rhodes, you know, in his day, it can lead you onto a media or social media type of platform as well, where people can then really have a look at their lifestyle and change it. It is hard graft at the bottom, but work your way up to the top, and then you certainly be rewarded.
It's a fun industry as well, isn't it?
You know, it's a massive industry, but it's a small little world. It's its own industry, own little world inside. You know, you can meet a lot of wonderful people along the way, most definitely. Wonderful characters. A Saturday night for me 20, 25 years ago would be on the pass, you know, sweating, grafting, and then at the end of it, you then clear down and then go down the pub and have a few beers. And the banter and the family that you can create makes it worthwhile, I think, mostly. Yeah. I've met some wonderful people along the way, some I'm still friends with today, that I sort of miss that side of it, but I don't miss the working hours and the weekends and the evenings, most definitely. But it still interests me that when I do go and see a customer in the kitchen, I like to have a little nosy around the kitchen and what are you doing here? What's this on here? Obviously looking for an opportunity for a sale maybe, but also seeing what they're doing, what they're operating.
And David, just finally, as we come to close the podcast, have you got a piece of advice you might give to a young chef coming into the industry or thinking about applying for next year's competition maybe?
Coming into this industry as a young chef, my advice would be to hang in there.
Right.
Yeah. Don't think that you're going to be this superstar chef within, the first year. It will take time. So patience is my advice.
Yeah.
Get another hobby maybe as well as, you know, cooking and being a chef. You know, maybe a sport. I had squash when I was a lot younger. I don't know if many people play squash now, but. But yeah, I think when you first find when I got my first job, I could have easily packed it in within 6 months because I felt like I wasn't progressing. But I think you realise looking back, I needed that. I needed that experience of making the same dishes regularly to build up my speed, to build up my working methods. So patience, hang in. Get another little hobby or sport that you're interested in and just wait. The opportunities will come.
In time.
I think sometimes now people want to be big straight away.
You know,
It's not real. It's not real.
Some fantastic advice there and hope people listen and take that on board. James, David, that's the end of the podcast, sorry, but I hope you've both enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
And thank you so much for welcoming us here to Married Chef HQ. It's been great. We had a pleasant journey, so it was all right.
That's good.
So next time, we're heading out to Italy and I'm at the Silicol factory, their new factory, just outside Venice. And we're going to dive into their innovations, cooking technology, and the benefits they bring to the food service industry. If you've got any questions or comments you want me to cover or topics, please email me at radford@kitchencuriosity.co.uk. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you for tuning in to Kitchen Curiosity. Don't forget to click subscribe. If you've got time, pass a review. I've been your host, Radford Chancellor, and you've been listening to Kitchen Curiosity.
Kitchen Curiosity is written and hosted by Radford Chancellor and is edited and produced by Tom Anderson. Kitchen Curiosity is exclusively sponsored by Ali Group and is a Sound Rebel production.